Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Narendra Modi, the extremely world-famous Prime Minister of India for some years now, a state visit to the United States, conversations with the president and his counselors, an address to Congress, all of this brings attention to India as the once and future power of the 21st century. But I read from Sadanand Dume, of the American Enterprise Institute, his column in the Wall Street Journal, a page about the visit and what needs to be done if and when India not only is to match China's economic prowess, but also to match the ambitions of the United States and its allies about democracy and about transparency. A very good evening to you, Sadanand. I believe the media reported a great success, Mr. Modi's visit to the Biden administration. Is that the opinion of the Indian public? Did they regard this visit as a success back home? Good evening to you.
Very good evening, John. Yes, I think that is the overwhelming opinion in India as well. And they see it as a success on two dimensions. One, as you mentioned, it was a success in terms of the optics, the pomp and ceremony. He had a wonderful welcome laid out for him at the White House by President Biden. He addressed a joint session of Congress. He had a state dinner, in fact, the first state dinner for Prime Minister Modi. He did not get a state dinner the last time he was here, filled with about 400 eminent personalities, including CEOs of major corporations and so on. So there was a symbolic aspect. And then on the practical aspect, there were several breakthroughs, including an agreement for the U.S. to transfer jet engine technology, GE jet engine technology, to India, which, as you know, very few countries have that. And the fact that the United States is willing to share jet engine technology with India shows a real sort of commitment on the part of the Biden administration to help India modernize as a potential counterbalance to China and Asia, which is, of course, a subject that you and I have been talking about for many years.
The confrontation with China, we'll get right to it. It continues. Is that correct? In the high Himalayas, the two military organizations facing off each other. And is there negotiation? Is there any movement on that?
It does continue. It has not been hot for a few years. Since 2020, when there was a loss of life, 25 Indian soldiers and at least 4 Chinese lost their lives. But there has nor has there been any resolution. Essentially, the Chinese are squatting on territory that India also claims as its own, and they are refusing to budge. And the Indians have had very limited success in getting the Chinese to pull back to positions that they occupied 3 years ago.
The confrontation is also economic, as I recall at the time, the Modi government very quickly canceled or jettisoned much of the Chinese inroads in apps and other technology into India. But that brings up the whole question of economic competition. I have read that the factory floors are starting to move to India from China. They're also moving to Vietnam and other parts of Asia. Is that accurate or is that an exaggeration?
I'd say it's both accurate and an exaggeration. We do have some cases. I think the most notable example that people look at is Apple, which has moved a small amount of its iPhone production to India, and it says that it's going to plans to move more through some of its Taiwanese subcontractors. The Indians are certainly hoping that because of the geopolitical winds that favor them, more and more companies are going to move towards India from China. But as you rightly point out, there are many other competitors for those factories, including Vietnam most prominently, but also Thailand, Indonesia, and other countries in Southeast Asia. But India is definitely in the mix, and Indian government officials are quite optimistic that they'd be able to get a chunk of that business.
The giant advantage India has, and it's something that China cannot challenge now, which is its youth, its birth rate, and its projection into the 21st century as a dominant power, the most populous state. China has wrecked its future with its one-child policy, and there's no catching up. It's a profound tragedy. India, does it see that advantage? Is it using that advantage now?
That's a terrific question, John. But India sees that window, right? To just give your listeners a sense of it, the median age in China is 39. The median age in India is only 28, which means that for decades to come, India is going to remain a young, a youthful, vigorous society. So that's certainly the opportunity from the Indian point of view. The challenge India faces is that making sure that those young people who are coming into the workforce in very large numbers and will continue to come into the workforce in decades to come are equipped with the kind of education and skills they need to participate in a more global economy.
And the participation also includes what you'd have to say is civil society. You touch on that in your column in the Wall Street Journal. Civil society means transparency, it means tolerance, it means freedom of the press. It certainly means no episodes of persecution that are not answered by the law enforcement. Does the Modi government see that it's being judged on the outside, even if it's popular on the inside?
I think they do see it. I'm not sure that they have so far managed to take any effective steps to change that narrative. So I'll give you an example, right? So last week while Modi was in town, I did a whole bunch of interviews with various media outlets in the U.S. And that was the main question, frankly, John, that most of them wanted to talk about. They wanted to talk about India's democratic backsliding. They wanted to ask me whether the U.S. was turning a blind eye to India's democratic backsliding. And so in many ways for Modi, this has created a problem, because if the dominant narrative in the West is about some of the democratic deficits that India faces, then it's going to, at least affect the judgment of some companies, maybe not all companies, but of some companies. And so I do think that they need to do something about this in order to achieve the economic goals that they have in mind.
And something about this. If I understand India's governance, it has a very large representative parliament. It also has many ministries, and it's divided into states that are competitive and have their own authority and their own governments. However, Mr. Modi has a great deal of power concentrated in his hands. Does he have all the authority he needs to move against this, the censorship, to move against the illiberalism that we see, to reach in and protect the minority communities? Can he do it on his own with his colleagues?
He could very easily do it on his own. He's a very powerful prime minister. He's the most powerful prime minister India has seen in at least four decades. It's very simple things. So, for example, he has about 303 members of parliament from his party in the directly elected lower house. Not even one of them belongs to India's largest religious minority community, the Muslims. That is something he could fix really easily, right? He could, even if he were to sort of find a handful of suitable candidates, that would go a long way to sort of, addressing some of the fears that people in minorities have. He could ensure that the party does not back laws that Muslims and Christians in particular see as discriminatory towards them. So he could do many, many things. He could ensure that, for example, tax authorities don't go after journalists or television stations or newspapers that they regard as publishing stories or airing stories unfavorable to the government. So he could do a whole lot of things to sort of, address these fears people have about rising illiberalism in India. Whether he'll do it or not, my bet is I don't think he's going to change course at all, at least over the next year, because we're heading into a national election and all of his focus is going to be on getting reelected in 2024.
Do the pundits in Delhi and throughout the country, do they see that Modi depends upon this narrow understanding of power? Do they believe that it's a vulnerability on his part, that he doesn't present himself as tolerant?
It's not an electoral vulnerability in India, and Modi has proved that by winning two elections back to back. So in electoral terms, he remains very strong. I think it's a larger vulnerability, if not for necessarily for Mr. Modi, but for India in the long term. It's an incredibly large population, 1.4 billion people, about 200 million Muslims. So when you're dealing with such large populations, what you want to do, this is just a commonsensical approach, is to try to minimize the amount of friction. You're always going to have some friction. We have friction in our society. We have friction in any diverse society. That's just the nature of the ballgame. But you want to have policies and you want to have a worldview that minimizes it instead of exacerbating it. And I think that's where the Modi government has struggled.
Sadanand Dume for the American Enterprise Institute. He writes for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.